You're listening to Sunday Karma with Craig Karmazin on ESPN Wisconsin and WisconsinOnDemand.com. Jason Wilde is brought to you by Boucher Automotive, where we ride with you every mile. 18 dealerships, 15 brands, and thousands of vehicles in stock. Check them out at Boucher.com.
Oh, good morning, Jason. It is a big day as the Bucs postseason gets going. Big week as the NFL draft gets going. First, Jason, is there an equivalent in the NFL? I feel like when your best player is out in the NBA, there's an extra like juice of like the crowd needs it, knows the other players, like, and there's that boost. And it may not happen for a month, but it can certainly happen for a game. Is there an equivalent of that, like that best player out extra boost that you see in the NFL ever?
Absolutely. But I think it's the quarterback. Like, I think it comes down to when your starting quarterback is unavailable. It reminds me of early in my career, I was covering Wisconsin men's hockey, and one of the greatest goaltenders of all time in the program's history was Dwayne Dirksen. And he suffered an injury right before the start of the WCHA playoffs. And John Michelizzi was his backup. And you would have never believed the intensity that the defensemen showed, diving in front of pucks, doing everything they could, because they knew that while John Michelizzi was a Division I goaltender, he wasn't Dwayne Dirksen.
I see that in hockey. I see that in basketball. I don't know. In the NFL, like, I guess there's those times you said it, the backup quarterback, when it's like that, hey, Zach Wilson's out and like Mike White's in and like we're going to dive and make every great catch because we're way more excited about the backup quarterback. But I don't know. Is that generally a thing in the NFL?
Yeah, I think if you look back in some of the games when Aaron Rodgers was hurt during the 2013 season and when he missed that game with a concussion in 2010, I don't think there's any question that Matt Flynn, not only because he wasn't Aaron Rodgers, but because that team loved Matt Flynn. I mean, Matt Flynn was him and Scott Tolzien during my time covering this team are the two guys really loved to play for. Now, maybe they would have felt that way about Doug Peterson as a backup also, but Doug Peterson never got to play
right. Because
Favre never missed games. But, you know, because of what we saw this from them in 2010 in that game in New England when Matt Flynn had a play. We saw it in 2013. I always remember that game in Dallas in 2013 when Matt Flynn engineered that huge comeback and Eddie Lacy had a big run in the start of the second half. There is definitely something to, if there's a connectivity with the team and that backup quarterback, that they elevate their games. Now, maybe there's times that this is not an equivalency because you know your backup quarterback stinks and you have no chance.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter how fired up.
Right. We didn't see the Jets. We saw the Jets do that maybe in game one against the Bills and their defense and everyone was jacked up. But that's where we said, right? Like sometimes it can go for one game, which we hope it does for the Bucks. But on to the Packers and on to the draft and on to a lot of picks in the early rounds this year and a new scheme, right? As you have a new defense. So what's your sense as, we're finally getting up to draft week of what they're going to do with all of these picks?
Yeah, I think I will be surprised if at some point they don't package some picks to move up, not necessarily in the first round, but maybe to take a second and a third round pick together and get back into the first round.
Well, but Jason, everyone's talking about all these receivers, right? That this is the most receiver rich draft. You could have 14 receivers in the first two rounds. It seems like a lot of the people who are like lurking around, you know, not the top where everyone's talking about quarterback are talking about receiver. So is there, if they're trading up, like what position are they trading up for?
Well, first, I would say that they're at an incredible advantage because they have two positions that are very deep in this draft that are not needs for them, right? Because the quarterback position, if they go, I don't know, what is it, 1-2-3 or 1-2-3-4 with quarterbacks, that creates the pushdown of other good players at other positions that if they weren't putting such focus on...
Wow, wait, Jason, I got to stop you there. Let's go back to that. So are you thinking that with J.J. McCarthy and with trade-up scenarios that Marvin Harrison may not end up being in the top four, that we could really see quarterback as the top four picks of this draft?
There is definitely a school of thought of that because it's the one position that's worth doing that for. Now, whether or not, you know, I think, what is it, Arizona's at four? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah.
I don't think when you have a chance to get, for instance, Marvin Harrison, who would certainly do a ton for your somewhat inconsistent former number one overall pick quarterback. I don't know if you risk moving back and then losing out on him. But there is that scenario. So even if it's 1-2-3-5 or whatever it ends up being with teams trading up, I mean, we know that the Vikings have positioned themselves intentionally to be able to go up, right? Because they know that they need a quarterback. They did not bring back Kirk Cousins. They're not going to be able to go long-term with Sam Darnold. So I think it's pretty clear that that's their intent. So whatever it ends up being, there's going to be a heavy focus on quarterbacks early that's going to push down quality players, especially in a draft where they think there might be 6, 7, 8 offensive tackles that are worth taking in the first round. Those guys will get pushed down. The Packers could certainly use a tackle. So that's one. The other part about what you said about wide receivers, and it feels like it was just a couple of years ago where we were talking about this is the best wide receiver class. That's the other position where I would argue that unless someone just that you cannot believe is sitting there at that position falls to you, to me, you're in a seller's market. And if someone else is desperate for a wide receiver, you're in a position to maybe extract. I always remember 2018. Packers started at 14. Then they traded back to, like, what was it, 27? And they got the Saints first-round pick a year from then. And so they accumulated an extra first-round pick in 2019. And then they went back up a few picks to be able to go get Jaire Alexander at 18. So I think this is the kind of year and the kind of draft class in terms of who's going to be on the board that they could really manipulate their board by moving up and down in multiple rounds.
But I love that, this your overall sense that, hey, everyone else wants quarterback, wide receiver. That's where a ton of the reaches may be, where people are like, hey, I need to get up to get this guy. I'm not going best player available. I'm going to go,
right.
You know, I'm going to get up to get one of these guys that I'm in love with. And the Packers don't have those needs. So usually you'd say, hey, that serves you when you have less picks because you could trade down and get more picks. But when you already have 5 picks, I hadn't thought of it your way of saying, hey, that means there's going to be huge value in these other positions. So you said offensive tackle. We know safety was addressed through free agency. Is safety
sort of
still a big need? Because you just said sort of, right? So safety and cornerback, are those still, would you say, the biggest defensive needs? Is it linebacker? Is it everywhere? Is this just a defense that, you know, you'd take an upgrade anywhere?
First of all, yeah, I think they could pick anyone on the defensive side of the ball, any position, and it will both be potentially best player available and need. I don't think they are set anywhere, right? Their defensive, let's look at the defensive front, right? Obviously, those outside linebackers are now defensive ends, which I thought it was funny. The Packers website finally got around to changing their monikers this week on the official depth chart and on the official roster because they were still linebackers listed earlier.
Okay, so who are we talking about here when we say that, the offensive linebacker?
We're talking about Preston Smith. We're talking Rashawn Gary. We're talking Lucas Van Ness. Kingsley Anagbare, who knows?
Wait. Okay, so no one's ever heard of the rest of those guys. So when you start with those guys, those are big-name guys. And I think about, like, other sports and, like, the NBA. And, like, I don't know if I'd want to go, like, a lot of guys would want to go from being considered a linebacker to being a defensive end. Like, is there a kind of, like, ego part of that? Or is it just, hey, it's the same position, it's just a different scheme? Like, can that be an issue where guys are like, hey, being a stand-up linebacker, rushing the passer, sexy, I don't want to be a defensive end?
No, because I think the best term for them now that covers both 3-4 and 4
edge rusher
systems is edge rusher.
Yeah.
So I think that's okay. How they think of themselves.
Okay.
But they do have to get a linebacker. They have to figure out what they're going to do at linebacker, because they've got Quay Walker, who'll play the Will. They've got Isaiah McDuffie, who'll play the Mike. And then the Sam is the strong side linebacker in a 4-3. They don't really have a clear-cut guy there. So, and they need depth at that position. We just talked about corner and safety being clear needs. Look, we don't know what the future is of Jair Alexander. You know, he reported to camp or off-season program to collect his $700,000 bonus. We don't know how long Eric Stokes can stay healthy or if he can stay healthy at all. So that's a need. And then safety, to the reason I said sort of, yeah, they spent $68 million on Xavier McKinney. What they didn't do is add a second safety. They didn't bring back Savage. They didn't bring back Jonathan Owens. They didn't bring back Tavarius Moore. They haven't re-signed Rudy Ford. So they basically have two guys that were rookies last year as the only two other viable safeties on their roster. So that's where they're at on defense. They can go anywhere. On offense, I just think it's so strange. I don't remember them ever being in this position where they lost three guys that played a ton for them on the offensive line. They also have a set of five guys that, if that is their opening day starting five, that the coaches are perfectly fine with that. So that puts them in a really interesting spot on this tackle idea. Like, for example, the guy from Georgia that has been talked about a lot, Mims, he started 8 games at Georgia. Now, at the same time, the first 2 games he started were the semifinal and the national championship game of the college football playoff. So he's played in big games. But do you want to start a guy on opening day if you draft him in the first round, who started 8 career games in college, even at Georgia? If you don't want to, you've got your starting 5, and you can start Rashid Walker at left tackle, and you can start Zach Tom at right tackle.
Yeah, but Jason, come on. Don't we know now, like, you need, like, 7? Like, a starting 5 isn't enough?
There's no doubt. No, you're right. And their depth, that's why they have to draft offensive line. I think in the first 2 days, they have 5 picks. I think they have to pick at least 2.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
But in terms of being able to start the opener, you can start those 5 and feel pretty decent about it.
But I think when we go back, right, with the tight ends from last year, with keeping Dylan in addition to, you know, Jacobs, you know, in the – I mean, is there a chance that they could go – nah, there's no way, right? Can they go through the first – 5 rounds, let's say, without a skill position player? Like, is that realistic that they could go that deep?
They can go through the first 5. They can go through their first 5 picks.
But you don't think 5 rounds? Well, first 5 picks I could see, but I'm saying even deeper, right? I'm saying...
No, I you know, they've... So then on day 3, they've got 6 picks. They've got a 4th, a 5th, 2 6ths, and 2 7ths, I think, if I'm remembering right.
Yep, so, that's exactly right.
I mean, if you want to get a running back, I mean, I look at what they've done at running back in the past. I like AJ Dillon. I like him as a guy. I think he showed some flashes, but there's no denying that he has been. If you invested a second round pick in him, the juice was not worth the squeeze on the production you got from him, especially last year when your starter missed 6 games. Right. So, I'm not spending a day 1 or day 2 pick on running back. There are exceptions, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, that maybe give you pause, but I don't think that there's enough, and there's certainly not that guy in this draft. I mean, the best running back in this draft is the kid from Texas, and he's coming off an ACL. You don't know when he's going to be ready. I don't think there'll be a running back drafted in the first round. So if you get the Aaron Joneses or the Jamal Williamses in the 4th and 5th rounds like you did in 2017, that guy can come in and play right away for you. So I would think they could very well go day 1 and day 2 with defensive players and an offensive lineman or two, and then add running back, another tight end perhaps if one falls that they like. But, yeah, I think we could be going into day three without a single running back, tight end, wide receiver taken on offense, and that wouldn't surprise me in the least.
All right, Jason, before we let you go, let's just do quickies on the rest of the division and what you think matters, right? You mentioned the Vikings lurking and knowing they need a quarterback. Seems like the Bears have figured out what they're going to do. First, let me ask you on the Bears. If you look at typically where a team drafting first is, they're a really, really bad team. And I think that's what people are thinking about when they think about the Bears. But, I mean, this is the Panthers' pick, right? This isn't the Bears' pick. And the Bears had a chance to actually get back in the mix in this thing with how good their defense was late in the year. Do you think with Caleb Williams and whatever else they do in this draft, they can be a competitive team, like fighting for this division this year?
I do. I do think that there are a lot of people that are thinking because they had the number one overall pick last year and traded it away. I think there's a lot of people who are under misapprehension that they're the worst team in the league. And there's a dog walking by the soccer field. And they're not, right? They're a 7-win team. And one of the things that you did that I thought was fun two months ago, when we talked about the fact that the two Packers games are the fulcrum games for the Bears and the Packers, right? Packers finished 9-8, right? They won the two Bears games. If they lose them and the Bears win them, and I'm not saying that they were equal teams last year, but as you pointed out, if the Bears win those two games, they're the ones that are 9-8. And the Packers are the ones that are 7-10. And so when I look at the margin of difference, it's not that great. Now, I don't know what's realistic to expect from Caleb Williams. Like, I know how incredibly talented he is. I understand all that. He's still going to be a rookie starter. I like the fact that they've got DJ Moore and they've got Keenan Allen, and they can add another skill position or another wide receiver with that 9th pick, or manipulate the board and go get someone earlier or later that can help them right away. To me, it's the Lions and the Packers are the tier one, and I'm not sure exactly who will be better this year. But the second tier of the Bears, depending on how effectively they augment their roster with this draft, I don't think there's a huge gap between tier one and tier two. I think there's a big gap between tier two and tier three because the Vikings feel like they're just completely starting over. And right now, they don't even know who their quarterback's going to be.
And there's no chance Justin Jefferson gets dealt, is there, around this draft?
I can't imagine. But, every time I say that, then something like that happens. But if I'm the Vikings, I guess I never thought Davante Adams would get traded either. But Davante Adams was at a different point in his career. You do not trade away a Justin Jefferson as he's coming to the end of his rookie contract. Remember, he was in the same draft as Jordan Love. And now that you've seen what Jordan Love is, could you picture the Packers trading him right now?
I think we've gone through this, right? Like the Kansas City Chiefs, we know they have Travis Kelce, but do we want to go through their receivers last year, or the year before?
No, but when they traded Tyreek Hill, had he gotten one extension already from them? Because he was like a 5th-round pick coming out of college. So I think they had paid him once.
Right, they had paid him once. My point is that ultimately having the elite of the elite wide receiver hasn't proven to be the equation that gets you to the Super Bowl. So if you need to rebuild, are you better off using Justin Jefferson to give you a haul? Like, what do you think Justin Jefferson right now is worth?
Two number ones, probably.
Okay.
So, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
If you're going to go up and draft a quarterback, you are an idiot if you're not going to find a way to keep Justin Jefferson happy to give your new starting quarterback a chance at being good. Like, you're going to trade away Justin Jefferson in the same year that you're acquiring your new franchise quarterback? I mean, are you really going to...
I mean, but we talked about how rich this year is in wide receivers, right? So if you feel like it can get you, you can already get one of those wide receivers, plus you can get, you know, the quarterback you need, plus a second wide receiver, right? And you have Hockenson, right? Isn't that all of a sudden, you know, a path?
I think that, yeah, but I think there's also the danger thinking that way, that you're, oh, we can just get another receiver. That's true. You could, or you could be the ones that draft Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, and Jason, I'm with you. If I have Justin Jefferson, I'm not giving him up. But I just wonder when you keep looking around and seeing how running backs are so devalued now, and if there's people thinking, hey, wide receivers, there's just so many of them. You said it, right? A few years ago, it was the most rich wide receiver draft of all time. And now it's another one where it's the most rich draft of wide receivers of all time. So it's not that the wide receivers don't have value, but if it's there's so many of them, and if someone is willing, you know, if the Atlanta Falcons were willing to overpay and give the Vikings everything to reunite Cousins and Jefferson, you know, at that point, you know, do you as the Vikings say, hey, maybe we do this to reinvent, you know, and give ourselves a chance to actually like win longer term? So that's the
I don't think it is at the point of the running backs, but I do think you're right. I think the wide receiver position in the eyes of personnel people has become slightly devalued, not like cratering like the running back position did, where you basically say we think it's an important enough position that we'll use, you know, a day two pick on that guy and we'll wear him out. And then when it comes to time to pay him, we're not paying him anything. We're going to let him walk, or we're going to at the very best franchise tag him. I don't think it's gotten to that point, but I do think you're right. I think that there has been a drop off in the mentality of how much a great elite wide receiver can tilt the field, and that you can find somebody else, especially. And I was listening to a podcast the other day with Kevin Clark, and I thought he made a great point that Matt LaFleur's offense, and the other coaches too, just Matt LaFleur is the one that I cover, but like the design, and when it's run the way it's designed, and you've got a quarterback who's doing the things that it's designed to do, it's possible that maybe some of these wide receivers that I really like that they have on their roster now aren't quite as good as they're made to look in the system. And maybe that is fueling the mentality of, yeah, this guy's really good, but we could probably make a guy who's not quite as good almost as good because of what we do with our system.
And that was where I was going to end it, Jason, by bringing it back to the Packers, because I feel like the reason we haven't said the Packers need a wide receiver has nothing to do with the guys they picked at the top of the draft, right? The reason they have this depth at wide receiver and the guys you probably feel most confident in are the guys they got later than the guys they got earlier.
Right. Right. And look, you know, I don't like this debate. I don't agree with this debate, but there is the mentality too that, oh, it's a good thing that the Packers don't have a clear cut number one, because teams can't focus on that one guy and take him away. I understand the logic behind it, but I just think back to one of my favorite moments during the pandemic when we weren't in the locker room and Davante Adams was so above and beyond good with us beat guys, of giving extra time on Zooms. And I remember him pulling out his phone and holding it up to the camera, and it was a freeze frame of a play. I think it was against Baltimore or against Chicago, but he goes 1, 2, 3. He's pointing at the three defenders that are all surrounding him on a route along the Packers sideline. It was a home game, and he points out how he had three guys covering him. And I don't care what the quality is of your two or your three. If you have a one that is such a stud that they are putting three guys on him, that is going to leave someone else open.
Well, Jason,
if your quarterback gets the job done, he's going to get
that's where it comes down to what the ego of that number one guy is, right? Because if you have that number one guy who has three guys on him and he's going to be mad if he's still not getting the ball, then I think that's where teams run into trouble. If you have the number one guy whose ego is such that he's going to be excited when that creates those other opportunities, that's when having the number one non-diva wide receiver, you know, can be a difference maker.
Yeah, and we'll see if one of these guys can evolve into that guy and then keep that same level of humility.
All right, well, you'll be hearing from Jason as part of our coverage. Alex Stroph leading it from the Q Club of Wisconsin this Thursday as the draft gets going. You can hear Wilde and Tausch 9 to noon all week long getting ready for the NFL draft. Jason, enjoy your soccer and keep those dogs in line. We don't want to have any kind of incident there. So have a good one.
All right, Craig. Take care. Be good.
There he is, Jason Wilde at Jason J. Wilde on X. If you would like to hear everything that Jason has to say.